What is going on, Sleeper Nation? We're back with a post-draft episode. Man, that feels real good to say. All seven rounds have gone. The undrafted free agents have been signed. And now we get to finally start analyzing and start preparing for the redraft leagues. Now, Sheehan, I don't know if you know this. I'm actually more of a redraft fan than an actual dynasty fan. I think redraft is more fun. I think it ups the skill level, and it's kind of nice having a different team this week. Of course, I am alongside Sheehan, the number one Australian fantasy football analyst. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm not a massive redraft guy. I'm big into dynasty, but that's why we're the original odd couple, mate. Either one of us likes redraft, one of us likes dynasty, one of us is always messy. You know, classic podcast duo here. But no, it's great. It's fantastic time to be a dynasty guy, looking at who these rookie late round dart throws are going to be, who went where, whose values tanked. Absolutely loved it. I watched every pick of the third day that started a decent hour here. Sadly, my mate's younger brother, Max Duffy, the punter from the University of Kentucky, didn't get picked, hasn't been signed as a UDFA, but we're holding out hope that he can end up somewhere. But I absolutely loved it. It was good stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, while we're disagreeing, I'm not a big super flex type of guy. I think that's just more of a niche Twitter type thing, if I could be honest. That's like, I think it was Yahoo that came out and said that I think it was like 57% of Yahoo leagues are half point PPR, and like there's only like a 1% is super flex leagues.
I don't mind super flex, but I definitely feel the fantasy football community is getting a bit ahead of themselves. You know, the good thing about pizza is you have a few toppings and you enjoy them. If you have everything on a pizza, it starts to get overwhelming. I've been in leagues where you've got tight end premium, super flex, point per first down, point per carry. It just gets ridiculous. Throw in IDP there. It's just too much. Keep it simple. I don't mind the jazz of super flex. I don't, particularly in dynasty, I think it makes your quarterback more valuable, obviously. But you know, to each his own, man. So long as you're playing half point PPR and FARB, you're doing it the right way.
To be honest, my favorite is standard.
Classic, no point per reception.
No point per reception. Yeah, because then there's like levels to it, right? Then there's levels to how important a position is. You know, RBs, that's it. It's undisputed. They're the number one priority. And then it goes wide receivers. And then you have to think about a quarterback a little bit more because they're just that much more important. And then tight end. And then of course, kickers and defenses really matter in that. And I'm a huge advocate of kickers. I love kickers. I think they're phenomenal. I'd rather get rid of a defense before I get rid of the kicker. And then, of course, you know, after that, you know, that's all there is to it. Standard, but I think the skill ceiling is much higher in standard.
I've never minded the kickers and defenses. My last league with defenses, getting rid of them this year. And I'm sorry to see them go. The trusty Baltimore Ravens have done a great job for me. They've come through for me in a pinch, but we'll wave them off into the sunset this year. But no, I think the more flavors can sometimes be overwhelming, so keep it simple. I would be interested in trying out the original fantasy football style, which is a pure scoring league. Who got the touchdowns? You don't score a touchdown, you don't get points that week.
Well, that's difficult. That's rough. I don't even know how you draft a team then.
Well, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole last year. I think it was because of the NFL 100, looking into how fantasy football got started. And there's a league, I think that's the Oakland Football League or something like that. They're still playing as league. They were one of the original fantasy football leagues, working it out from the scores in the newspaper. And of course, back in those days, you don't want to be trawling through and adding stuff up by hand. So it was as simple as who scored, how many points did they score, and that's what your points were that week. The league is still playing by those rules. I'm sure people have moved on, people have passed away, there's new faces, but by and large, it hasn't changed. I think that's pretty cool.
That is actually pretty cool, and something that I always look forward to.
Judge Nader banging his gavel down.
There we go. I had to. It adds emphasis, as Josh would say from Drake and Josh. But of course, in this show, we're going to be talking about the draft. We're going to talk about the winners, the losers, the instant impact rookies, and the sleepers that we should be looking out for. I think that's always fun because you get to start digging in the rabbit hole. That actually makes sense. You know, we're not speculating who goes where and value. It's a lot more direct, a little bit easier to read, and a little bit more fun because it has a little bit of a clearer picture. But of course, let's get started. All right. Let's not waste too much time. I like talking about winners considering I'm definitely not one. I know you are one. So give me a winner in this draft.
I think Miles Gaskin, one of the great winners of the draft. I think everyone expected the Dolphins to come out of this with an early running back. Truth be told, this wasn't a great running back class, but I expected them to bring in more challenges than just Jared Doakes, a running back they added in the 7th round. Throw into that, they added Jalen Waddle, 6th overall, wasn't he? Open up the box there, give Tua a bit more room, give him some more weapons, and Miles Gaskin looks to be the beneficiary. Of course, Gaskin got the job because he looked the best in camp. So if someone comes in, looks better than Gaskin, I assume Salvon Ahmed's still there. I think they brought in Malcolm Brown. But to me, load up on Gaskin. I'm glad I didn't sell him.
Right now, that Miami Dolphins offense, there's going to be at least 30 touches a game. 30, 35, I'd say. Because I expect that defense to be shut down. Not a lot of points. A lot of yards on the ground. And if Gaskins can get 20 of those 35 touches, then he's an RB1.
Yeah, for sure. I think certainly early in the season, the Dolphins are going to be a fairly run-heavy team. As Tua gets on the same page as Will Fuller and Devontae Parker, as he gets reacquainted with Jalen Waddle, they're going to be leaning on their runners. And as you say, good strong defense. And to be a good defense, you need a good running game.
Exactly. So, I mean, Antonio Gibson, I don't like him. I don't think he's that great. I know we can debate this all we'd like, but he is coming out as a winner. There's no real way to dice it up. Whenever a team doesn't really add a running back and help strengthen the offense, then you're a winner. That's just it.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Gibson either. I think he had some nice games, but I don't think he looked special. Certainly not someone who was totally untouchable at the position. I half expected them to bring in again some competition on maybe day 2, day 3. They didn't do that. The only player they added was undrafted free agent Jarrett Patterson. And I actually think I did my now annual Bradbury candidates article. So they're guys coming from the bottom of the roster who might make an impact for fantasy. Had James Robinson on that list last year before the Jags cut Leonard Fournette. So take a victory lap for that one. But I think Patterson has as good a chance as anyone in this UDFA class to be fantasy relevant, despite the fact he doesn't really have a home run gear. He's an excellent between the tackles runner and can make players miss. He could be thunder to Gibson's lightning. Of course, JD McKissick is there, but there's no high-end competition for him for touches in that offense. And they also didn't take a quarterback. So they've still got Taylor Heinicke. They've still got Ryan Fitzgerald. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Apologies, Fitzmagic. So I suspect they will be leaning on that running game a bit like Miami, but for different reasons.
I'm going to have to fully agree with you there. But my winner is going to be Allen Robinson. I mean, he has been in the gutter for so long, not because his play or his stats. I mean, those have been off the charts, but he finally has a quarterback, or he potentially might have finally a quarterback. And now there's just hope in the city of Chicago, not because the Cubs won a World Series not too long ago, but now the NFL team, Bears, might actually have a chance now on the offensive side. And of course, Allen Robinson, if he's productive with nobody, he's got to be productive with somebody, right? They even take an offensive lineman, and they don't really take wide receiver help away from Allen Robinson. So he's still going to be the focal point. I really like that pick. I think the Bears finally had a phenomenal draft. And worst comes to worst, they still have Andy Dalton. They still got the red rifle, and he's going to make sure to feed Allen Robinson. No questions there.
Yeah, we talked about it on our post-draft pod that the Bears and Bears fans were winners. And that means Allen Robinson's winner, as you say. He's just been with trash his entire career. I think you could probably argue that Mitch Trubisky is his best quarterback, or at least second year Blake Bortles was the best quarterback he's played with. That's not a massive field. But then again, I think we've all got those friends who maybe like the questionable decisions in their life and struggle when it comes to the finer things. Maybe Robinson is going to be one of those guys, the lottery winner who blows it all straight away when he finally hits the jackpot. But let's hope that he can get that service he finally deserves and keep putting up points for our teams.
Exactly. Now, Keenan Allen's also going to be a winner in my book. They take offensive linemen. They don't really take any competition else in that draft to really take it away from him. It's just going to be another star-studded wide receiver one season for Keenan Allen.
Yeah, absolutely. They brought in Josh Palmer, who we'll probably talk about later, who I think's an excellent addition. I think he's a bit of a Keenan Allen light, to be honest. But he's still going to be the alpha dog there. They've still got Herbert there. They brought in Penei Sewell to strengthen that offensive line. It's good news all round for Keenan Allen, and particularly in redraft, he is. There is potentially might be a cap casualty after this season, but for now, a definite winner from the draft.
Keenan Allen was definitely disrespected last year, and there was no reason to not disrespect him, considering Tyrod Taylor was the quarterback. He looked like he was getting injured consistently, and there was just a bunch of question marks from offensive line to running game, and he was still super productive. I mean, albeit it was because their quarterback Herbert really stepped up and played well, but I mean, Keenan Allen's one of the best route runners in the league. He's going to show it another year this year.
Yeah, he's tremendous. One of my favorite players, and happy he's on a lot of my teams.
Exactly. Now, the Vikings also here. We're going to discuss them in the winner's circle because they drafted offensive linemen and didn't do anything to really disrupt the weapons they already had in place. Now, Justin Jefferson, he's going to be sure-fired wide receiver one going into next year. Same with Adam Thielen. Brandon Cooks is still one of the best RBs and still one of the best choices for the first overall pick.
Dalvin Cook?
Dalvin Cook, sorry. Who did I say?
Dalvin Cook. Brandon Cooks.
Brandon Cooks.
One of the great running backs of our game.
Hey, he can take a jet sweep for a touchdown. Yeah. I'll give him the rush. But Dalvin Cook, like I said, or like I tried to say, I should say, he's still going to be the RB1 and one of the best RBs you could take in the first round.
Oh, yeah. He is the workhorse there. I mean, we talked about Gaskin, Gibson as potential workhorse. Dalvin Cook is one of the few true workhorse backs still going around. But I don't know if I'd call them necessarily a winner. Certainly Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson a winner, but Kirk Cousins still strikes me as one of those guys who needs weapons around him. They did add Amir Smith-Marset, but I was looking through their wide receiver depth chart. It's not great reading. I think you're talking about Smith-Marset, Chad Beebe, BC Johnson fighting out for that third wide receiver slot, and it doesn't fill me with confidence, particularly if there's an injury to one of those big two. But as you say, they strengthened their offensive line. They traded back and got the lineman they probably could have taken there anyway. So good draft. But I still think they need a bit of work on offense.
I call them winners because those two are the only weapons they have on offense. And now they are sure-fired wide receiver ones instead of, is there going to be another receiver to take the load, take the help away from the two? No, I don't want that. I want them to be the only two receivers there. And because they are untouched fantasy values, that means, in my opinion, they're winners.
Fair enough, man.
Does that make sense?
Can't argue with that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
There we go. All right. So give me a loser beside me.
Well, another one that we hit on our post-draft emergency pod, James Robinson. I mean, come on, Urban Meyer. We heard that it was Kadarius Toney he wanted there. The Giants took him. I mean, I was going to put in who were some filthy picks that we didn't like. I hated that Toney pick. I hated the Travis Etienne pick to crush James Robinson's value. And to be honest, as hyped as Urban Meyer is, I think it's a sign of a bad organization who want to look at the draft value of a player rather than what a player's done. Robinson was effective last year. He could have used some help to spell him. We've talked about the other guys around him, Agumba Wiley or Hyde, or even if they'd have added like a Michael Carter or a Kenny Gainwell later in the draft, would have been good news for Robinson, keep his legs fresh. But this is just disrespectful. It's a disrespectful draft pick, and I think it's bad news for Robinson. I don't think it's great news for ETN, at least this season either.
I'm not sure what the plan is, because I don't know how long James Robinson has signed, but he was an undrafted rookie last year, making it so it's not like he's going to be gone sometime soon. I mean, and he was on a better rookie contract if he was signed long-term. I think 3 years is a undrafted free agent's contract. So I'm not sure why they're sinking too much cap value in the running back position when it could be done for cheap, especially with Carlos Hyde there. They should have taken a wide receiver to help him out, a defensive back, linebacker. There was a lot of options they could have gone on.
I mean, we talked about them wanting Kadarius Toney. Rashad Bateman was still on the draft board. Imagine pairing him with Trevor Lawrence.
It could have been a great combination alongside, sorry, now his name completely eludes me on the other side.
DJ Chuck.
DJ Chuck. There we go. Yeah. I actually like that reference pretty well. That was a pretty good one.
Thanks, man.
You could pat yourself on the back for that one. But yeah, it's realistically, that could have been a deadly 1-2 combination. It would have helped the rookie quarterback really feel comfortable, but a running back, I don't know. That's tough.
Maybe that's a sneaky winner then, is that man DJ Chark, because they didn't really bring in anyone. Brought in Jalen Camp, who I quite like, but he's a day four guy and a different sort of player. If they brought in one of those elite talents first or second round, I think they might have tanked Chark's value, but now he's paired with the savior, the golden boy, Trevor Lawrence. So
in theory, yeah, you would be correct. DJ Chark would be a winner out of this draft. He doesn't get replaced. No real competition. He gets a quarterback. They still have a good offensive line. Yeah, actually, you would be 100% correct. He would be a winner.
Look at that. We're just uncovering winners everywhere. It's just what we do.
Well, you know, when you lose so much, you could spot a winner.
That's exactly it, man.
So I'm going to pick a loser here, and the Packers. Did they do anything wrong in the draft? Not really. They had actually a pretty decent draft, in my opinion. They're just losers because Aaron Rodgers is pissed off. And they didn't take another wide receiver. So congratulations, Packers. It's something I would do. Therefore, you're a loser.
Yeah, no, great call. I think this draft went off the rails when they drafted Jordan Love last year. They did pick up Amari Rodgers. Clearly, they want a Rodgers on their roster. Haha, the same joke everyone made. And he's going to be a nice fit. He's a bit of a Randall Cobb type. But, like, Aaron Rodgers is not going to stick around so we can play with someone who's got the same initials as him. He doesn't like people who have the same name Rodgers.
Yeah, but so Amari Rodgers has Amari Cooper's first name and then Aaron Rodgers' last name. Therefore, he must be good, right?
Yeah. I mean, a player got taken called Brady Breeze in the draft. So by that logic, yeah, one for all the IDP players. I think he might be a safety. Get on board Brady Breeze.
That's probably one of the best names I've ever heard. And you know the dad's an NFL fan. There's no way you could sit there and go, yeah, Breeze is my last name. I'm going to go Brady to match him.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It was up there as a great moment of the draft, along with the Jets drafting Michael Carter and Michael Carter II. They've got another loser for you.
That's
Russell
rough.
Wilson. No O-line help in this draft. They added a downfield threat in Dwayne Eskridge. I don't know if he's a Dwayne or a Dwayne. I don't know if this is like Jim pronouncing Dwight on The Office. But Eskridge is essentially a fast downfield guy. Questionable hands. He's basically a better Diami Brown. But, like, why add a downfield threat when you can't stop your quarterback from getting sacked a million times a game? Like, he's not going to get open down the field because he's going to be flat on his ass from J.J. Watt, from Aaron Donald, from Nick Bosa, from everyone they play against. He's going to be running for his life. He's going to wish he was in Chicago. That's how bad it is.
If you're a fan of the NFC West, you know Russell Wilson will break all of those sacks, somehow climb the pocket, and throw an absolute dot down the field for a touchdown. And it went to Metcalf more times than not. I don't know why you wouldn't throw it to Metcalf other than Dwayne Eskridge. I think you have to emphasize the D a little bit more because there's an apostrophe there. And then it's a capital W. So it's like two different words. It's Dwayne. You got to add a little emphasis onto it. But I agree. You need some offensive line help, but granted, it's still going to be a top 10, if not top 5 offense regardless. Russell Wilson, he just makes magic out of his ass and not in the form of diarrhea, but in the form of touchdowns. So, I mean, that offense will be fine. They need to worry about their defense.
Well, hopefully not diarrhea. Maybe that's why they don't let Russ cook, because he kept giving everyone food poisoning.
I mean, he went from cooking phenomenal steak to you know, expired takeout to the end of the
year. It was a reverse episode of Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares. He was cooking good food, and Gordon, by the end of the season, has got his head in the idiot sandwich. A chewing gum idiot sandwich. Pete Carroll's with his mouthful of Wrigley's chewing gum, chomp, 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 with that, shout out to all the people who don't like mouth noises, with the idiot sandwich around Russ's head, going, this is why we don't let you throw the ball, man. Russell's there, like, I'm trying my absolute hardest. What do you want from me?
Oh, yeah. What do you want? Get an O-line. Maybe you get what you want that way. A sneaky loser is actually, he's actually not much of a sneaky loser. Rashad Penny, first round, biggest bust of that, one of the biggest busts of that draft. He got his option declined for his fifth year. So this is going to be his final, if it even makes it that far. Chris Carson is also going to be a sneaky winner considering now he's one of the lead backs with Carlos Hyde gone. I think Chris Carson is inching towards that RB1 territory. And with Russell Wilson refusing to cook or unable to cook, I think he's just going to carry a little bit more of a load now.
Yeah, definitely. I would like to get Chris Carson in those mid rounds of redraft and ride him all the way until he gets injured. But they did add a UDFA called Josh Johnson, who I quite like. Not the Josh Johnson from the XFL and the AAF and all those years ago in the NFL. In fact, I think that Josh Johnson's with the 49ers. But they added this guy, Josh Johnson, who I think has potential to be, Chris Carson's backup. And unlike the Jags, who, pissed in James Robinson's face, Pete Carroll doesn't mind who he gives the balls to. Who he gives the ball to, as long as they do the job. Yeah, I think he minds who he gives the balls to. I was nearly the idiot sandwich.
Pete Carroll gives the football to the best player available and the best player on the team. And we have found that it does not matter your draft stock. The best player is going to be on the field for the Seattle Seahawks. So if Chris Carson gets beat out for that starting role, it's because he was not the best player on the team or in their running back room. So that's always the good thing, because you have to watch the undrafted or the late drafted running backs on the Seattle offense.
Yep, absolutely. I think Johnson's the man to go with there. But as you say, if he beats out Chris Carson, the job's his. But until then, bye-bye-bye Chris Carson.
Or bye-bye-bye Rashad Penny. Depends on how you want to think about it.
Both fun homophone wordplay there for everyone. That would be words that sound the same but are spelt different. If you liked the draft in Cleveland, get on over to Canton, Ohio for Draft Night Out on Saturday, August 14. Starts at 4 p.m. the day before the Fantasy Football Expo. If you're coming along to that, for $30, you can get entry into a live draft, an exclusive t-shirt, and a chance to win some great prizes, including signed memorabilia. If that sounds like something you want to be part of, come along, have some food, have some drinks, get into some live drafting, talk a bit of trash, have a good time, then head on over to draftnightout.com for more information. And that's put on by us at SleeperWire, by our friends Eat Sleep Fantasy, by our friends Draft Party USA, and of course, Prestige Sports Memorabilia, not affiliated with Prestige Worldwide.
There we go. So now let's talk about some instant impact rookies. Now, give me one rookie that is going to make an immediate impact.
Well, one we talked about earlier at length, and certainly longer than I expected to talk about him at the time, Michael Carter from the Jets. He was taken at the top end of the fourth round. He was the best running back at the Senior Bowl. He was a guy who made me look a little bit closer when I was watching that game. He really impressed me. He can contribute on all downs, and the Jets should be playing from behind a lot this year. Carter's an excellent contributor in the passing game. And if you believe in Javonte Williams, you should probably believe in Michael Carter as well, because the coaching staff at NC State certainly believed in both of them. And they thought Carter was good enough to take more snaps off Javonte Williams. In fact, I think Carter outsnapped Javonte Williams. That's how much they liked him. He's a shifty little running back. And I think he's one to watch for the Jets. Of course, his competition there is LaMichael Perine. And as someone pointed out on Twitter today, if you think that Michael Carter, a fourth-round running back, is going to come in and displace Perine, well, Perine was a fourth-round running back himself. I'm sure there's going to be a bit of a camp battle there, but Carter is the one to own in New York for me, and I suspect you'll get him at a pretty good discount.
I am a big fan of LaMichael Perine. So I am on the LaMichael Perine train. I have said it and been outspoken on him plenty of times, considering he is a very good pass protector. Usually pass protectors always find a way onto the field. But Javonte Williams also, like you mentioned, he's looking good. And you look good, you play good, and you're going to be on the field if that happens.
Yeah, I think so. He's probably didn't get the landing spot you'd want, but Melvin Gordon, well, for redraft, it's not great news for Javonte Williams, but for Dynasty, you might get a bit of a discount because he might not be as useful this year, but Melvin Gordon will be out of town after this year, and I expect Javonte Williams is going to be a three-down guy for most of his NFL career.
There you go. So while we're talking about RBs, I want to backtrack just 1 second and talk about losers, and I want to add the Niners running back core into that losing scenario. I mean, Raheem Mostert, he was looking like a surefired RB1 to start the year, and then not only did they trade up to pick a running back, but then they also drafted another running back soon after. And then they signed another undrafted free agent running back. So, I mean, right now they got about 6 running backs signed onto the roster. They're probably going to sign another 2 more. They still had Jamichael Hasley that they signed last year and found a way to make to the roster. I'm not sure what that running back core is going to do over there. I mean, maybe they have a six running back set and I don't know what's going to go on there, but man, that is definitely a loser circle.
Yeah, that was, it was a strange pick. Clearly they like, Trey Sermon, but if you cast your mind back a couple of years, it was, Kyle Shanahan pounding the table famously for Joe Williams, who wasn't really anything. So maybe Sermon's going to be a little bit better, but quite humorously, Justin Dodds, our guest from a couple of weeks ago, one of our writers at Sleeperwire, was doing a breakdown of the day two running back picks. And was struggling to work out what the breakdown was going to be in the San Francisco backfield. Was it be Mostert? Was it going to be Jeff Wilson? Was it going to be Jermichael Hasty? Was it going to be Wayne Gorman? Was it going to be Trey Sermon? I think he finally got to the bottom of it. And about 5 minutes after he submitted the article, the 49ers took Elijah Mitchell. So sucked in, Dodds.
That's poor guy. You know, I would never wish that on somebody to sit there and try to decipher a 49ers backfield, considering, like, I don't even think Shanahan knows. He just said screw it. You know, he knows the memes just like the apparent Jets do with the same names. They saw a running back and they said, why not? Niners entered the chat and they went and took.
Yeah, I mean, Sermon was is a highly touted prospect anyway. I don't know enough about running backs. Certainly I don't know enough about Trey Sermon to say if he's going to be a good fit in that 49er scheme. I did think Chuba Hubbard was going to be quite a good fit in that scheme, but obviously he ended up, I think he went to Carolina. So we don't even need to talk about him as a 49er, but I was all geared up for that.
I had, now I was discussing with a last podcast, two podcasts ago with the Fitz. We were discussing Trey Sermon for a second, and I made a joke that, you know, just because he's a running back, the Niners are going to take him. I didn't think that was actually going to happen, but turns out, well, all good jokes have some truth behind it, and it just ended up happening.
Well, as our church-going friends will know, that sermons are best on Sunday anyway, so maybe it's all a big circular meme in itself from the 49ers.
They tend to do that. So I will pick a quick impact rookie, and I'm going to go Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, Lions wide receiving core has absolutely no talent behind it. I mean, right now, who's the best wide receiver? Terrell Williams, and he is coming from a torn pec, was that? I don't even remember his injury. He didn't play all last year. He is still not healthy. So as of right now, Amon-Ra St. Brown, he could be the starting wide receiver one. And not only that, they took an offensive lineman in the first round. And a lot of people don't know this, but they actually have an all-pro center, a top 10 left tackle, and now they have a top draft pick right tackle, who is expected to be phenomenal, of course. So that means Jared Goff, who is able to support two wide receiver ones on the Rams in Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, he should have no problem getting Amon-Ra St. Brown involved in that offense.
Yeah, I just realized with you saying that it was the Lions who drafted Penei Sewell and the Chargers drafted Rashawn Slater. So thank you for everyone who's tweeted me between then and now. I will realize my mistake I'm not going to go back and fix it. But you ask who the best receiver on that team is. You're right. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I loved him in college. I thought he was a pro receiver playing against, amateurs in college or playing alongside amateurs as well. Yes, he benefited from having Keaton Slovis throwing him the ball. But he's excellent. He's a big slot receiver. My comp for him was Robert Woods. We saw what Jared Goff could do with Woods in LA. I think he's really going to lean on Amon-Ra here. And you're right. Is Terrell Williams even going to make the team? Is Breshad Perryman going to make the team? They were another team that I picked over for the Bradbury candidates. I think it's going to be Jonathan Adams Jr., who I don't necessarily love, but is another, I guess, guy with low ceiling, like Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's not to say they're not bad players, but they're certainly not. You know, you're not replacing Kenny Golladay with another alpha here. You're replacing him with a Jarvis Landry type. Not, as I say, nothing wrong with that, but they're not going to set the world on fire. But you're right, Quintez Cephas is still there. He's slower than a wet week. And they added Sage Surratt, who couldn't buy separation for all the money in the world. And they added someone else, Javon McKinley, potentially, who I like the look of, but also punched campus police officers as a freshman. So that's not a great sign.
What a G. That's my kind of guy. Never mind. I take that back. That guy's my sleep pick. He's going to make an exact impact right there.
Yeah. Throwing hands as much as he could, but you're dead right. Someone is going to be the number one receiver on this team. That said, I don't think they're going to be the number one target. It's going to be TJ Hockenson. It's going to be my man 2K Swift. But Goff will get his work done with Amon-Ra, Saint Brown. And I think he's going to be a good culture guy as well, and Detroit need them. They've got the Dan Campbell. He's a bit of a buffhead coach, and I think he's going to love the fight in Amon-Ra there.
There we go. Now give me another winner.
Nico Collins from the Texans, big wide receiver to play opposite Brandon Cooks, not to be confused with Dalvin Cook. He has a broad skill set and the physique to be a wide receiver one in the league. He did opt out of 2020 and he might have been held back by the Michigan offense, but in 2019, he averaged 19.7 yards per reception and scored 7 times. Again, prototypical size, good athlete, good hands. Went to the Senior Bowl. Questions around how well he can separate, but he's not alone in the class in that respect. So, again, a bit like the Lions, someone, whoever it is under center for the Texans, is going to have to throw to someone, and it might as well be Nico Collins. It's going to be cheap. Probably don't need to draft him in redraft. You can watch and wait with him on the waivers, but certainly in dynasty leagues, he should be going probably in the back end of your second round.
Now, who's going to be the quarterback for the Texans?
Davis Mills. Put it in the book.
Davis Mills? He's going to be the week one starter?
No, I think it's going to be Tyrod week one, but it's going to be Davis Mills who gets the most starts there. Whether that's by some unfortunate medical accident or whether some other forces are going to conspire to get Tyrod Taylor off the field, or Tyrod Taylor, as I think he prefers, off the field. We've seen he was in Cleveland before he got benched for Baker Mayfield. He was in Buffalo before Josh Allen. He was in LA before Justin Herbert. So book it. Davis Mills, quarterback of the future. Get his gold jacket tailored up now.
Oh, man. That is something.
I should say, I don't think he's probably going to be much of a quarterback. I think he's at his best is going to be like a Kirk Cousins, which pretty good NFL career. But just with that record that Tyrod Taylor's had of shepherding through the next generation, then maybe Mills is going to be the lucky beneficiary.
If Tyrod Taylor has that kind of talent, maybe every rebuilding team should sign him just for that security blanket. I think that's pretty genius of me now that I mention it in my head. So my next pick is going to have to be it's a kind of a home run, it was a little easy, a little cherry pick off the top. Najee Harris, like, it's easy for me to say it, but you have to mention it because Steelers running backs have always typically been productive if you kind of throw away last year. But last year, I'm going to go as an outlier. They needed some help on the offensive line. They got some help on the offensive line, and now they have a running back. And with Ben Roethlisberger throwing over 550 passes last year, that number's got to go down. He needs to be throwing about 400 passes per year. And if that's going to be the case, that means running backs are going to have to pick up the slack. Najee Harris is going to be there. He's a big bully, big guy. I expect him to actually have a handful of receptions, definitely more than Derrick Henry, I'll tell you that much. And if that's going to be the case, he's going to have to be even a redraft running back taken early.
Yep. Yeah, excellent analysis there, man. I think, as you say, he's going to be a good pass catcher. I don't really know how to peg his touchdowns. I think he's either going to be a guy who gets a lot of work in the red zone or absolutely none at all. I don't think it's necessarily a great addition for all those Steelers pass catchers. They even added Pat Freiermuth in this draft as well on day two. So there's another mouth to feed from Big Ben, but they're giving him weapons to succeed, and Harris might be the linchpin of taking them from a 9-8 team to maybe a 14-3 or something like that. They need to be able to run the ball, and Harris gives them that opportunity.
Right now, running the ball is kind of, I don't want to say the meta for the NFL, but NFL teams that have won the Super Bowl have always been able to pound the football and gain those first yards and milk the clock. I mean, even Patrick Mahomes and his offense, when they won the Super Bowl, they had over 100 yards against the Niners. So you can air it out as much as you want. You got to be able to run the ball if you want to win. And Ben Roethlisberger, he's going to air it out, and he's going to put Najee Harris in his chance or in a good position to score touchdowns. I mean, they don't have a big bruiser that could really tumble forward to get in to the goal line, and especially inside the end zone afterwards. Najee Harris is specifically going to be built for that. I expect him to not only have 15 to 20 touches per game, I think he's going to at least have a goal line opportunity.
Yep, I think you're probably right. There that they'll try and punch him in with him. But you're dead on about teams need to run the ball to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
it's a passing league. But we've seen that you need to keep the defense honest, and you can't do that if you don't have a running game. When teams are going nickel and dime formation, you need to be able to run it at those other corners or slot corners. And and really make them earn their money.
And the Steelers' offense is no slouch. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger definitely has regressed over the years, but he's still going to be a above average quarterback that's going to move the ball down the field. And if you're getting first downs, you're getting rushing opportunities. There's a lot of flack that Ben Roethlisberger gets, especially after a little bit of a meltdown in the playoffs last year. But he, all jokes aside, he's still a very good quarterback. And I mean, with opportunity comes production.
Yep. That's exactly it, man.
So we got rookie sleepers to talk about. And I know you like sleepers a lot more than I do. I like the big names. You know, I like the splash hits. That's my personality. You seem to like sleepers a little bit more than me. You know, I don't like sleeping too much. So I want you to break them down.
Yeah, I don't mind going off the beaten track with some of these guys. So we'll run through these quickly as possible. These are just names to keep in your head, probably more for dynasty leagues, but there's a couple here who could have some value in redraft as well. I'm going to start with one of my favorite players in the draft, Josh Palmer. He was drafted on day two by the LA Chargers. I tweeted before the draft saying that if he went even in the fifth round, I was going to be very excited. He ended up going in the third. He's an excellent all-round receiver. The only knock on him is he just is not fast at all, but he goes to the Chargers to learn from possibly the best quote-unquote slow receiver in the league at the moment, Keenan Allen. There's a lot of Keenan Allen in his game, good route runner, excellent hands, and he's going to be a long-term prospect there. Just an excellent all-round receiver. Let's talk about a running back now. Javian Hawkins from the Falcons. He was a UDFA, in fact, and the Falcons running back room is disgracefully bad. I really liked Hawkins at Louisville. He is a guy who has those NFL street moves. You look at him and all of a sudden he's teleport juke to the other side of the field. He's throwing rude spin moves and he's capable of scoring just about any play. He is small. He's not quite Tariq Cohen small, but you're looking at satellite back, scat back. And with the Falcons in cap hell and not too many options ahead of him, I think he's a good chance to be the lightning in this case to Mike Davis's thunder. Now, I think this guy was a day two pick. Apologies if he was a day three. Dez Fitzpatrick, we've both been big fans of Josh Reynolds on this pod, Natter. And I think Fitzpatrick is a guy who might be able to take some opportunity away from him there, which is disappointing for us. The Titans do need a second receiver to go with AJ Brown and, I guess the Firk as a pass catcher, and Dez Fitzpatrick is a good option for them. Another wide receiver I really like from day three, Cornell Powell. Ever heard of him? From the Chiefs. Good over-the-shoulder player, good downfield operator. And they're a team that, although they're a high-powered offense, they really haven't settled on their number two receiver. Sammy Watkins is out of town. There's a bit of DeMarcus Robinson about Cornell Powell, but I really like him. He goes from catching passes from Trevor Lawrence to Patrick Mahomes. He's a guy I will certainly be looking at the back end of my second-round rookie drafts or even early third round. And then a couple of tight ends. Tight end is such a horrible wasteland. Brevin Jordan, another guy from the Texans, as we talked about almost with Nico Collins. Someone's got to catch the ball. They're going to be throwing a lot. So why not Brevin Jordan? He's excellent after catch, good athletic profile. And he was a surprise that he didn't go earlier. So good pick, I thought, by the Texans. A lot of people had him pegged as the tight end two or three in this class, and he ended up going in the fifth round. And another guy, in fact, I think he went ahead of Brevin Jordan. My last sleeper is Tommy Tremble from Carolina. He's got a name a bit like a wrestler in a kids video game, but I really like him. He's out of Notre Dame, was used mostly as an inline blocker. Another guy with an excellent athletic profile. I suspect he's going to be a better pass catcher at the next level. And Carolina clearly unhappy with Ian Thomas last year. And I think Tommy Tremble, good chance to get on the field early and good chance to produce, even though they added another couple of weapons in Terrace Marshall and Shee Smith.
Now, these are deep sleepers. So how deep are we talking? Like super deep or like kind of deep or shallow deep?
Well, Palmer is, I would say, a sleeper. Javian Hawkins, deep, deep, deep sleeper. You don't even need to worry about him probably in redraft, but a guy to watch and waiver-wise. He's a guy who has potential to flash in the preseason and get on people's radars with some big players. But if we're talking dynasty, this is like a fourth round. I would take him in the fourth round. I really like him. I just tried to trade for him in a sleeper wire writers league unsuccessfully with a fourth round pick. So maybe I need to go a little bit higher. Des Fitzpatrick, I think, is probably a deeper sleeper than Josh Palmer, but again, upside. He's a guy to watch from waivers as well. Cornell Powell, same deal as Des Fitzpatrick. And then these tight ends, I probably like Jordan's chance to get on the field and produce for fantasy this year more than Tremble, but I like Tremble a bit more than Jordan overall. But both of them, deep sleepers.
Alrighty, there we go. So, make sure to sign up for our Patreon, of course, at patreon.com/sleeperwire. And of course, be there to check out all the great content from our team of writers, such as Sheehan and his crew. Always remember to rate and subscribe and review our show on your favorite podcasting platform, whether it's a 1-star or a 5-star. I will take any of in between. Follow us on Twitter at Sleeper Show. And next week, we're supposed to do some IDP.
I think you've misread that, mate. We've got next week we're doing some DP, so that might be a fun episode for
even better.
All our ASMR friends. But no, we are going to be talking IDP. Get a couple of IDP experts on there. Whether you're new to IDP, whether you're a seasoned player, we're going to be talking about IDP draft. We're going to be talking about what the hell it is, players to value, how you build your team. So if you've got any questions, hit us up at SleeperWire. We'll do our best to answer those with our IDP experts next week.
Alrighty. Other than that, good luck, everybody.
Take it easy, guys.